gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Orora Announcement on Significant Items conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star one on your telephone. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. I will now hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Nigel Garrard. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thanks, operator, and good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining at relatively short notice. I'm joined today by Brian Lowe, who is my successor, and Stuart Hutton, our Chief Financial Officer. We just wanted to go through the announcement today and to give you the opportunity to ask any questions, which we will answer. So we've announced an SI, or significant item, that we will reflect in our accounts to 30th of June, and it consists of two areas. The first one relates to our Petrie site. Those of you who have followed us for some time will remember that this is a site that we operated for 70 or 80 years in Queensland, just north of Brisbane. It's a large site, and we have been going through the process of remediating that. In recent months, we've been negotiating with the owner of the land, the Moreton Bay Regional Council, about the remaining decommissioning and dealing with a number of issues on the site that we've uncovered, and we've been working in collaboration with the council. And we have now come to the point where we've agreed with the council as to what needs to be done, and we've entered into a contract with a specialist environmental consulting firm to manage the completion of the works, and that's enabled us to ascertain or estimate the residual cost, and we are, as a consequence, recognizing a 35 million dollar after-tax SI for the additional decommissioning costs. We expect the decommissioning to take another 3 years, and roughly we would expect the 35 million to be spent equally over each of the next 3 years. So in simple terms, about 12 million dollars a year, give or take, for the next 36 months. And look, there's some risk in that, and potentially we could do better than that, potentially maybe a little bit worse. We've taken what we think is a conservative approach based on all the information that we've got today and the revised contracts with the council, and we've involved, as I said, a specialist consulting firm to help us. So we think we've covered the cost and the risks involved, and now it's about executing the agreed plans. The second part of it relates to restructuring and impairment charges. And I take you back to May 2019, where we presented at the Macquarie Conference, and we talked about slower start to earnings experience in early calendar '09, and that we were reviewing our cost structures in both Australia and Australasia and North America. That review has continued with some vigor, and we're now in a position where we have refined and completed our plans and begun the implementation of those across our businesses. What we're trying to do is to ensure that we position our business for the economic conditions that we're seeing, so that we can be clear that we can optimize the Orora position as we go forward. It's something that we've chosen to do, act quickly and do it ahead of perhaps when some others might do it, but act appropriately given the conditions, so that we have the outlook in as favorable forward look as we otherwise could. Brian and I have been working, as along with Stuart and the rest of the team, collaboratively on this over the last few months, and I think we're pleased with the plans we've put in place, and execution of these have begun. From a returns point of view, from a cash point of view, firstly, the majority of the initiatives will be implemented in the first half of FY20, so between now and the 31st of December of this year, although some will flow into the second half of FY20, and returns approximately a 30% return in FY20, and when we get to a full year return in FY21, about a 65% return on the restructuring. We've also had a look at some of our assets and made a small non-cash impairment charge of $3.7 million on a couple of assets, which will have no material impact on our future earnings. I do want to reiterate that we are reaffirming our guidance that constant currency underlying earnings for FY19 is expected to be higher than that reported in FY18. So no change in our earnings expectations for FY19, and we can give you more details on those when we announce our results in just under 2 weeks' time. The reason for doing this today is that we have an obligation under the ASX listing rules to make the market aware of things that that are deemed to be material, and given we've just completed the Petrie situation and quantified that, we felt it was appropriate given our obligations to make the announcement today. Now we have some clarity. So I think the message we want to give you is we are acting on the difficult trading. We're doing what we think is appropriate. None of us enjoy restructuring businesses and reducing the number of people, but we're paid to deliver an appropriate return to shareholders, and we've done what we think needs to be done to position the business in an optimal way for the future. So I might leave it there, operator, and open the line up to any questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question today, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound or hash key. Our first question comes from the line of David Errington from Merrill Lynch. Please ask your question.
Morning. Good afternoon, Nigel. Two questions. One, if you could provide a bit more substance as to what these cost plans are, where they actually are, whether they're in North America predominantly or whether they're in Australia. If you could give us a bit more substance on that, that'd be appreciated. And then I've got a second one after that, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. David, I think what I can say today is that we are making changes across both geographies. You'll appreciate that not all of this has been implemented yet, but by the time, so it's a little sensitive to give you too much between the two, other than to say we are making changes across both geographies. An example in Australia, just to give you some idea, I think there's been some press this week about Kimberly-Clark moving their operations in New South Wales to Asia. We're a major supplier to Kimberly-Clark, so we've needed to downsize our operations as a result of that business going to Asia, as an example. But I think all I'd like to say at this stage, just being respectful of the people in our business, is that we're making changes across both geographies, and we can and will give you more detail when we release our results in just under 2 weeks' time, because we'll have completed a number of those things by then.
Okay. My second question, Nigel, I mean, I challenge every company that I cover on this issue. It's a bugbear that I've got, so I'm just not picking out Aurora.
Sure.
But I've got a fundamental issue where companies take what look to be ordinary course of business. I mean, you guys, since I've been covering you, always talk about challenging business conditions.
Yeah.
I mean, since Moses was wearing short pants, companies face challenging business conditions. So there's nothing new in that. But then all of a sudden today, you come out with what looks to be like a $30 million pre-tax significant write-off for basically just doing some restructuring. And then you're going to get a 65, and you take that below the line, which looks to me to be ordinary course of doing business. And then all of a sudden, the new CEO gets this massive free kick in 21, where he's going to get a 5% growth to his NPAT just because of the benefits that you take from a one-off charge today. It just looks a little bit, why is this a one-off item? Why is this a significant? Why don't you just absorb the costs of doing this restructure in your ordinary course of FY20 and FY21? Why do you have to take the charge as a provision in FY19 and then get the benefits in 21 and 20? where basically you take all the cost pre now, whereas you should be, and I challenge all companies, this restructuring is just ordinary course of doing business, and you should take the cost of that in your FY20 and 21 result, rather than give what's going to be a 5% boost to earnings in 21 when you get the benefit from it, with no costs associated because you took it as a one-off significant item at the end of 19. It just, to me, I challenge all companies as to, you know, because it's ordinary. It's every company restructures, Nigel. Every company does this. This is just an ordinary course of doing business. Why is this different to any other time?
Yeah, look, I take your point, David. The point from our perspective is this is not something we've done before. So this is the first time we've done it. Other restructuring that you would have seen Aurora do, we've just worn as part of our normal results. This one is different in that it's quite material. To give you an idea, you know, it's there's a lot of people involved across the two geographies, and whether we put it as an SI or not, I think we're duty bound to call it out from a reporting point of view so that people understand that the underlying earnings are a certain number, and that these one off charges are not what we would call ordinary business. So
but you're going to wear the cost in 20. You're going to wear the cost in 20 and 21. That's when the costs go out. But you're going to report the benefit of that with no cost because you've taken it as a one-off in 19. So everyone just ignores it. Oh, it's a significant item in 19. It's just a provision. And then all of a sudden you get this massive kick-up. The new CEO, all of a sudden, has got a 5% boost to his profit in 21.
Yeah, I mean, I get your point. I think what we have done as much as we can is be transparent, David, and say here are the costs and here are the returns.
But you're doing something that you've never done before. Why are you doing it now? And what's different now to it being an ordinary course of operating a business? You've got challenging conditions. You've got to adjust your cost base. That's fine. Every business does that. Why do you have to call it out as a one-off and then get the benefit in 20 and 21?
Well, I think, David, we can debate the SI, and Stuart here, obviously, debate the SI and disclosure, but I think the main point we're trying to say is whether we call it an SI or we call it restructuring, it would be disclosed separately anyway. Because we would want to take the charge as a one-off, because otherwise you guys would have enormous difficulty trying to understand our numbers. We're trying to make it easy for you. The reason for this happening now is, you know, we flagged it in May. We did have a pretty patchy start to calendar 19, and there's no doubt that the economic conditions that we're seeing in Australia and North America have, I would say, deteriorated in the last 6 months. Mm. And so we would say...
But they've been doing that for the last 2 years. I mean, at 3 years.
Yeah, but just all we're saying is that in this sense here, there's like the Kimberly-Clark example is a result of that. I mean, they're basically shutting down here to move to Asia. So that's a structural issue as well as just a general slowdown in the economy.
But last year you had Toys R Us. Last year you had Toys R Us shut down. You didn't do it then.
And we called it out.
But you didn't take a one-off item.
Well, to be fair, David, that was $2 million. I wouldn't say that was material. I said we can debate the point whether it's an SI or not. All I'm saying to you is whether it is or it isn't, we would call it out separately so that you as someone trying to form a view on what the underlying performance of the business is, you can do that.
Mm.
Well, I think it is an SI because this is a reset of our business to across, you made the point, across both Australasia and North America to reset our business to be appropriately sized for the market conditions that we have endured and we see continuing for the foreseeable.
Okay. Well, I think I made my point on it, so I'll probably get to leave it there.
We understand your point.
Thanks.
Hopefully you understand ours.
Okay.
Your next question.
Any other questions, operator?
Yes. Your next question comes from the line of Larry Gambler from Credit Suisse. Please ask your question.
Yeah, hi guys. A few questions from me. Maybe I'll just belabor that point by Dave, because in 18, the Smithfield proceeds and gain was offset by some restructuring. In 19, there'll be some restructuring. Now, I'm just wondering, as you indicated in May, signaling that there might be some restructuring, are there any internal projects now that might lead to some restructuring? You don't have to actually specify the restructuring, but any projects that might lead to some restructuring in the next year or so?
From what we have now, Larry, it's Nigel here. From what we have now, we have provided for all of those that we know of. There's nothing else that I think we're aware of that would result in any restructuring based on what we know today.
Okay. With regards to the existing restructuring, to what extent is some of it spent to help integrate Pollock and Bronco?
None.
Okay. And the last question for me, Nigel, is I understand that there were some Petrie proceeds still to come. Is that right? And should I be including that in the cash flows?
Yeah, I might hand that to Stu. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, Larry, you're right. I think we've got about, in round numbers, about $10 million still to come. So that will come over 20 and 21.
Yep. Over 2 years.
Two years. And see it as relatively even through that. So, look, as you said, it'll happen. The expenditure will happen sort of evenly over 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair to your question, there's about $10 million that we will get, and say half of it in 20 and the other half in 21.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
Your next question today comes online of Brock Campbell from Crawford. Please ask your question.
Yeah, hi there. Brock Campbell, Crawford here. Just a question on the US. So you're saying a slower start for earnings, and you've called it out before, which is fair enough. But have you been able to grow EBIT organically in North America on a US dollar basis in FY19?
Well, I think, Brooke, we can deal with that when we release our results in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay. And then what I know it's a small impairment, but what's the asset that's been impaired for $3.7
million? The major one of those, we took an investment in a startup in North America, and we've taken a view that part of that may not recover, and there was a couple of smaller assets in Australia in parts of business that we're not trading in anymore.
Okay, and then you mentioned this Kimberly-Clark contract. Can you help us understand how significant that is? What's the annualized sales, and I guess when does that stop? When do those sales drop out?
I can't, Brooke, give you an indication of particular customer volumes. That would be inappropriate. But my understanding is that their plant effectively closed this month, and so our sales to them have stopped as a consequence. So we need to resize our business accordingly.
Okay, thanks. That's it from me.
Thank you.
Your next question comes online of John Patel from Macquarie. Please ask your question.
Oh, good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Good, John. Thanks.
Hey, John.
Just had two questions. Just in terms of the returns, the returns look relatively high there, particularly in 21 at 65%. I mean, is that sort of, so the question is, why is that? And is it sort of a case of, if you spend a dollar, you expect to save a dollar, or more or less?
I'll let Stu answer that one, maybe.
John, it's mainly because it's really just a timing issue, as Nigel alluded to in his opening remarks. Some of the restructuring does involve some headcount, but the headcount won't necessarily come out until most of it, we hope, will come out in this half, but some of it will move, still be with us in the early part of calendar 20. So it's really just a timing issue, John.
And are you saying 65 is high, John? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Look. I think if you take people out, which is a fair chunk of this is people, then a dollar out should be pretty close to a dollar saved. But obviously it won't be 100% like that because if I use the Kimberly-Clark example, there's some there's some customer volume that's gone, so we're not going to get dollar for dollar, but the returns should be relatively material, which is why we're expecting 65% in FY21.
Yep. And I suppose the question with always these things is, are you expecting a net benefit to the bottom line? Obviously a reflection of what's happening out there, but are you expecting these benefits to be, to be completely offset by sort of challenging market conditions, or are you expecting net benefits?
I think, John, it's Stuart here. I mean, I think it's a fair question. I mean, I think as we look at it today, what we're seeing is that's where we would expect the positive impact to be on these programs in their own right. But to your point, there's going to be other headwinds and other moving parts outside of these programs. So, I mean, if conditions continue as they are, I mean, there will be some other headwinds that will potentially erode some of the benefit from these programs. But in terms of these programs in isolation, that's the returns that we expect.
Okay, thank you. And just the last one, just in terms of Kimberley-Clark again, is it a single plant we're talking about or are there multiple plants?
It's a single plant from our perspective, yeah. And look, I don't want to make too big a deal of Kimberley-Clark. I just use that as an example of the type of things that are happening. Right, so I don't want you to walk away and say that was the catalyst for it. That's a small part of it, but I was aware that there was some publicity about it this week, so I just wanted to use that as an example of the type of things that are happening.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question today comes from the line of Joe Holbrook from Goldman Sachs. Please ask your question.
Good afternoon, guys. Just a very few small questions. You've already touched upon how most of the restructuring is from, redundancies. Could you give us an indication of the proportion or rough proportion that come from redundancies versus other issues like the Kimberley-Clark one indicated?
No, I don't think we can, other than to say, as we've looked at the business, there are a few facilities which we'll close. And there are people that we'll take out of the business as a result of either volumes or our ability to be more efficient with some investments that we've made. So net, you know, both of those things there. But I think you could safely assume that the people out is going to be the bigger proportion of it, but I'd rather not go into details.
Okay. And just on Kimberley-Clark, what was the driving factor behind their relocation from New South Wales to Asia?
I'm starting to regret even bringing up Kimberley-Clark, to be honest. I don't know. You have to ask them. I'm not sure. All I know is that they've closed operations and moved to Asia, so that'd have to be for them. Let me just say, I use that as an example. I don't want you to all think that was the sort of catalyst for all of this. We shouldn't overplay that in any stretch.
Understood. And just the last one for me. What is the status of the contracted gas supply for Aurora in calendar year 20, given the contracts rolling off end of this year?
Look, we've got some updates that we can give you as part of our full year results in a couple of weeks' time. So we're in the process of finalising those. But I think all I'd want to say today is that that's going according to plan, and we'll give you more details in 2 weeks when we do our results.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Joe.
And your next question today comes on the line of Larry Gambler from Credit Suisse. Please ask your question.
Yeah, thanks. Just a follow-up question, Nigel. You mentioned facilities will be closed. One, can you specify whether that's in the US or Australia, and maybe can you get more specific and nominate the facilities?
Larry, I think I'd plead the fifth on the basis that we haven't announced those within the business yet. So I'd rather not say.
Okay, understood.
Well, Larry, it's Stuart here. It depends on how the next sort of 10 days play out. We'll give you an update as best we can on all detail between what's between North America and Australasia at the results on the 15th.
Okay, thanks.
There are no further questions on the line today. I will now attend the conference back to Nigel for closing remarks.
Look, thanks, everybody. I appreciate you dialing in at short notice. Let me just reiterate that we've done it. We've done this today to keep the market informed and to let you know as much as we can up front. I take on board the comments that are made, and thank you. Please don't make too much of the Kimberley-Clark comment. I use it as an example. I don't want anybody to overplay that. We are adjusting our business for the market conditions as we see them across Australasia and North America. Our view is that it's appropriate for us to act sooner rather than later, and that's what we're doing. and we've done this today in the interest of transparency to the market, as we have in the past. So appreciate that, and hopefully you can see what we've done in that light, and we look forward to talking to you all 2 weeks ago yesterday with our full year results. So thank you, everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our call for today. We thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect.